When temperatures drop, people without stable housing seek shelter. From SDPB, today is Friday, February 21st. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, people travel from all over the state, sometimes the country, to find work and opportunity in one of the best places in America to live, Sioux Falls. But when the South Dakota dream becomes littered with obstacles, many seek temporary shelter at the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House. Today, we'll talk with the organization's leader, Madeline Shields. We'll ask about the mission of Bishop Dudley, trends in what people need that can't always be met in a temporary emergency shelter, and what all of this means for the rest of the state. It's all part of our ongoing conversations about homelessness in South Dakota as communities seek solutions for growing challenges. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. On January 23rd this year, hundreds of people convened at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Sioux Falls. The Sioux Falls Regional Homelessness Forum discussed how to address the issue in southeastern South Dakota. We're going to bring you part of that recording later in the hour. But first, I spoke with a local leader who was in the forum's audience that day. Madeline Shields is executive director at the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House. She joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls on a frigid day. Madeline Shields, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I asked you to come down as a follow-up because we recently aired on SDPB radio the entire conversation at the Sioux Falls Regional Homelessness Forum with Mayor Paul Tenhaken and Secretary of DSS Althoff and some people from the county and city housing. You were in the audience during that time. There were a lot of people who provide services in the audience from the faith community, from the nonprofit community. It didn't start then. It doesn't end then. It's an ongoing conversation. But I wanted to ask you first some of your impressions about that forum to begin with. What were people saying? What were you thinking during the forum and then in the days after?
Sure. You know, I was grateful that they got together, for one thing. You know, when we don't really know what the city and the county are doing together. You know, I don't have any information on what they're working on. Matt Althoff, who now is the head of Department of Social Services for the state of South Dakota, he used to be the chancellor for the diocese. Yeah. So I've known Matt for a really long time, and I know where he stands on homelessness and on helping people who need a hand up instead of a handout. And to see all of them and Larissa, new at Sioux Falls Housing, mm-hmm. to see all of them up there on that stage, you know, it gives me hope of more collaboration, which I hope then turns into sharing of funds, and let's get these folks into housing for people who cannot live in a traditional apartment, cannot live in a traditional housing setting.
Yeah. All right. It's cold out the day that you and I are recording this. It's one of those dangerously cold times here in February in South Dakota. What are you seeing at Bishop Dudley right now, especially in the cold?
Sure. We're seeing between 170 to 180 people coming to our doors for check-in in the evening. We can't turn people away when it was 22 below zero this morning. So, mm-hmm. you know, we just can't do it. People will freeze to death. They'll freeze their skin. And we're going to continue to keep our doors open. We're open doors, open arms. We are a resource that saves people's lives. And that's what we were meant to do. And to hopefully get this process moving forward, Bishop Dudley House cannot just warehouse people that no one else has the bandwidth to take care of. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about chronically, medically challenged people. People with chronic health care issues, amputees, chronic heart failure. I have those folks at the Bishop Dudley House in a homeless shelter. They don't belong there. We're not a hospital. We're not a nursing home. And we are not trained to take care of people. Mm-hmm. And so something has to give where other agencies, other resources have to come up with a place for people with chronic medical problems, chronic mental health challenges, which we are not a mental health facility either. Mm-hmm. But that's who we see more and more of every single day. We can help those folks that are down on their luck and who just have a blip in the road. We can get them. We can help them get their IDs. We can help them get back to work. We can help them with transportation. We can help them find housing. Mm-hmm. It's the other people that have no business being in a homeless shelter that are chronically staying in a homeless shelter because no other agency is taking them.
So let's talk about your mission. Just brief history update on how you came to be and who's supporting Bishop Dudley Hospitality House.
Sure. The Bishop Dudley House opened 10 years ago, actually. We just had our 10th anniversary. And so we're really the new kids on the block. We are a temporary emergency homeless shelter. We have a day shelter that's open from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. We serve lunch, we have snacks, we have coffee, we have a women's room, a women's day room, we have a men's day room. They can come in and use the bathroom, take showers. We're open all day and do their laundry, use the computers, look for jobs, meet with our case managers. And then in the evening at 6:30 p.m., we are an overnight emergency shelter. And so those same folks, they can come back, they check in, and that's when they're assigned a bed, and then they can stay overnight. So we're not open 24 hours, but we're open 22 hours a day. And so we try to get as many people in as we can. We have rules that they have to abide by, and, you know, most people are very good about coming in. They help us do all of the work around the shelter. And so we're really a community center for many, many folks. People in the Whittier neighborhood come over, they eat lunch, they do their laundry for free. We are a community resource.
Yeah. So tell me, if I had housing instability and I show up at the door, I register with you, I say I need some help, what happens to me and my family when I first show up? What kinds of questions are you going to ask me? What kinds of directions are you going to point me?
Sure. The first thing that happens when someone comes to our doors for check-in in the evening is we're going to do an intake. And that is, it's about a 30-minute process because we get to the root cause of what happened. Why have you become homeless? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the information is only as good as the people are willing to share with us.
Right.
And so,
which can be hard to share with someone that you don't know.
Right. And yeah, it's, you know, because a lot of times people that show up on our doors, this is their last stop and they're terrified. They can't believe that they have gotten to this point in their life. And so it's really, we have to use kid gloves with them to say, you know what, it's going to be okay. We're here to help you. We have case managers, we have community health workers. And then our check-in manager, she'll look at people and they'll say, okay, tomorrow we're going to assign you to our men's case manager, our women's case manager, the community health worker. She'll refer them on, and then there'll be follow-up. And so the questions are all asking, like, where did you stay? Where did you come from? What's your name? What's your educational level? Are you disabled? Do you have any barriers? Do you have mental health barriers, addiction barriers, next of kin? We try to get all of that information. But it's quite detailed information about people.
Yeah. Are there themes? I'm sure every story is a different story.
Sure.
Everybody has a different path to get here. Everyone has different hopes for their own futures. But have you noticed themes of what's kind of happening again and again that you're seeing?
We do. We see a lot of people that come here for opportunity. That's the number
one. You mean come to Sioux Falls?
They come to Sioux Falls,
okay,
for opportunity, whether it's from Mitchell or Northwest Iowa or from Florida. It's they're coming to Sioux Falls because, frankly, there are advertisements all over our nation saying Sioux Falls is a great place to live. Yeah. We have jobs, they're construction, we're growing. The growth is a place, and it's a fantastic place to raise your family. Now, what we see is, yes, it is. We agree. However, not everyone who comes here is work ready. They don't have IDs. They don't have a Social Security card, but they want to work. And so a lot of times we're starting from scratch. with people. Mm-hmm. And that could be that, you know, many, many people come here. That's one theme that you asked. They're, they're coming here for opportunity. Another is they end up here through the medical care system. Mm-hmm. We see over and over again that people come, they end up either being airlifted in, ambulance, and they end up at one of the health systems here in Sioux Falls.
Sure.
It's chronic. There's something severely wrong. They've had a horrible accident. They've had a terrible illness. And they end up being hospitalized for a long time. And then they end up getting transferred to, like, a rehab facility.
Sure.
Well, now they've been away from their own home for 3 months, 5 months, and now it's time to discharge them. Where do they go? Because, well, I haven't paid my rent in 5 months. I don't have a home to go back to. It's gone. I don't really have a lot of family. So let's just drop them at the Bishop Dudley House. Happens all the time. Law enforcement, security from other agencies, a ride. Somebody will stick them in a lift even and go to the Bishop Dudley House. No call ahead. We don't know what we're getting. Mm-hmm. Accidents, people come and they're missing limbs, missing feet, and now we have to figure out, okay, how do we help this person? We're not a hospital.
Yeah.
And we see that quite often.
And you don't have a nursing, or a, if I wanted to work for you, I wouldn't have to be trained in, as a CNA,
for example. No certified nurse assistants. We do not. We hire what we call client advocates, and these are folks that are willing to help guests make a phone call, look up something on the computer, get them some hygiene items. You need a pair of socks? You need some underwear? Yeah, I can get that for you. How about some toothpaste and a toothbrush?
Yeah.
That's what our staff is trained to do. We'd have de-escalation training. The number one quality of our staff is they have compassion and kindness.
Yeah.
They're there because they want to be there, because it is not an easy job. And nobody's getting rich working at a homeless shelter.
Right.
And so it's a calling for very many people. It's people are called to give back. And a lot of people have been there. And so they're like, I've been there. I know what you're feeling right now. I was homeless 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I want to help you.
So from a hospital, you know, a hospital discharges someone or a nursing home discharges someone, say they don't qualify for, you know, to be here. They're beyond our mission. They're somehow, through a series of events, dropped off at your front door. Mm-hmm. It's not your mission. Is there a gap in, you know, a place in this community of Sioux Falls that handles the medical transition to get people back on their feet? I mean, is there a facility that's supposed to exist here that doesn't?
There is. Yeah, there's many gaps, I can tell you. There's one with people with chronic medical issues.
Yeah.
Because you know what? The hospital can't keep them. They don't have enough beds.
Right.
Nursing homes don't have enough beds nor enough staff. So there's a huge gap for people that are chronically ill that wind up at homeless shelters because nobody else knows what to do with them.
Right.
And another gap is we have people with major mental illness.
Yeah.
There is nowhere for them to go. I don't know. I walk through the hallways and it breaks my heart to see these folks. They are suffering. They are suffering from schizophrenia, from anxiety, depression, hearing voices. There are more conversations that go on at the Bishop Dudley House, and they're one-sided. They're just, there's got to be 24 people that do nothing but talk to themselves all day long. And they exist there, and we take care of them. That's not our mission.
Yeah. You can feed them and give them toothpaste, but you can't give them medicine or assessment or treatment for a chronic mental illness.
We connect them with Southeastern Behavioral Health. We connect them with Avera Behavioral Health. We connect them with other resources, but they're not housing them. There's just not enough. There's nowhere to put people who you can't hand somebody. You can't cure homelessness with handing somebody the keys to an apartment and saying, here you go, because they can't care for themselves. There needs to be another Minnehaha County safe home. Mm-hmm. The safe home is a facility that has 33 units for people who are chronic alcoholics. And they can only be alcoholics. They can't be drug users. They can't be sex offenders. They cannot be have mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. We need places that are like that, that are set up. Maybe it's a dormitory, and you've got case management there. And people can have a small living quarter, but they have somebody to check on them every day. Like, hey, did you know you have an appointment today? Did you know that you're supposed to go to the doctor? Or, hey, did you remember to take your medication? Yeah. It can't be that difficult.
Other communities have places like that that you're aware of?
Yeah. I've heard from some medical professionals in that Denver is solving their homeless problem. Mm. And they are doing it very well and rapidly. Now, I haven't done any research on this, so it's just hearsay from here.
Yeah.
But other people who are invested in helping the homeless in our community are doing that research. Utah, the same thing. I know that the Latter-day Saints have come up with some kind of program, and I've just heard about this, and they're doing it. But we need to do something.
Yeah.
Because Sioux Falls is a beautiful place, and the one thing we cannot forget is that we have more in common with our homeless and mental health challenged folks than we have more in common than we don't.
Yeah.
They want to be happy. They want to have a good life. They want what's best for their families. They want what's best for themselves. They just don't know how to achieve it. And so Sioux Falls is always going to be a place that people come because everybody loves to be in nice places.
More to this conversation after the break. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our conversation with Madeline Shields. She's executive director of the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House in Sioux Falls, and she's sharing part of her perspective on homelessness in our community. A bit later in the hour, we'll bring you part of January's Sioux Falls Regional Homelessness Forum for context. But first, back to Madeline Shields. We heard during the forum on stage, one of the gaps that Secretary Althoff mentioned was transportation. There was a group of students at Augustana that I interviewed who had done a research project, and that was a thing they found a lot of issues with, was public transportation just had some holes in it, and it was difficult for people to get places from place to place. Other places where you think there are gaps in services that would really make a difference if were addressed?
I think, you know, a lot of people say, you know, if they just go get a job, well, that's great. And so many of these folks can work. Employers can hire them. They have to be flexible. You have some people that they can come to work and they'll do a fantastic job for 3 hours, but then they have to go. You know, now the walls are closing in, whatever it is. At Bishop Dudley House, we do the same thing. We employ as many folks as we can, and when they've had enough for that day, then it's time for them to go. If that's all they can do, that's all they can do. And so we have to look at how we manage our own businesses to be able to accommodate some of these folks. We had a young woman she's kind of on the autism spectrum, the sweetest, kindest young woman. She stayed at the Bishop Dudley House off and on for 4 years. She cleaned every portion of that building. She would work as a volunteer because she stayed there, and she could not get hired. She would go on job interview after job interview after job interview because she'd rock and she'd start looking around. And people are like, oh, I can't hire her. You just got to give them a chance. And that's part of the problem, is that until we could find a program where she could get an apartment, now she's looking for a job now that she's housed again, but she could not get employed. She would have tons. She works with our case manager. She'd go with her on these interviews, and people just will not take that leap to hire her.
Yeah.
But she was fantastic. She worked in the kitchen at Bishop Dudley House. She cleaned the day room every single evening. And when we'd close, when the guests would go over to the banquet and have dinner, she stayed back and she cleaned everything up spotless. Who wouldn't want that?
Sounds like a good employee.
Yeah, we just have to, you know, people really need to take a leap of faith. And you know what? It might not work out five times, but on number six, you might find the best employee you've ever had.
One of the things I remember about the forum was this idea of data collection and information sharing. What would you add to that? Because the mayor was saying, we don't have some of this information, but it does appear like some of the information is available even publicly on your website. So are there gaps in the data that is shared between city, state, and county and nonprofit agencies that you think you would recommend improving?
You know, I know what we share, and we share everything. We share everything with the state, with the city and the county. All of our statistics are reported at the end of every month. Our case manager, Anna, she sends it over to, I think, Sioux Falls Housing. So it's like a big pie.
Sure.
And everybody, there's a sliver, and we're just one little sliver in that pie. And so how we collect our data is when people check in, we're electronic. And so we have, it's called Airtable, and it's managed through the Helpline Center. And so every single person who walks through our doors for overnight shelter is in a database, and it tells what time they checked in and what time they checked out. It has their name, their date of birth, everything that we have collected on that initial intake. We know if somebody's brand new if they're not in our collection. We've got, over 5,000 names in there at least.
Yeah.
And so a lot of folks who come in, that's just a check mark for them because they've been there before. So all that information is there. And then we share that information. We put our stats on our website every night. It's a real-time tracker through that same software so that other agencies can see if they have someone come to their door and say, we don't have anywhere to stay tonight. They can pull up Bishop Dudley House's website and say, hey, they've got 27 beds left. Get over there. Go over there. You can probably stay there. So that's helpful. But I think it's hard for me to comment because I don't know how everybody else does their tracking. And so we had 2,027 unique individuals walk through the Bishop Dudley House last year in 2024 who needed some kind of shelter, whether it was day shelter. And I think we did narrow it down. It was like 1,920-some that were overnight shelter.
Sure.
And then the day shelter was like 250. They're just people who come in during the day.
Yeah. So are there things that we should be doing or can be doing that that connect us instead of divide us?
You know, I think I always say, come into the shelter. And even if you've never been in there, you would never need to feel out of place at all. It's a busy place.
Yeah.
People of all walks of life come into our homeless shelter. It's incredible because it is a community center. And I want people, we're an open book. Yeah. Once people come in and they see what's going on and they start to see what the successes are and what the challenges are, they're like, I get it. And I see this every time a new person comes to volunteer because I wouldn't say every volunteer, but a lot of volunteers come in and they have some reservations like, I don't know, I'm being called to do this. I want to do it, but I don't want to do it. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel, I don't know. I'm afraid. I know I shouldn't be afraid, but I'm afraid. And you can see it on their face. And after they walk in and they're there for like a little bit, an hour maybe, they're like, this is not a scary place. These are just people.
Yeah.
But we see them as being different. And it's so fun because I sit down and I get to talk to, we have a lot of people there. And we had the pit count recently, which was the point in time where they count the homeless people. And I sat down and visited with a guy that I knew stayed at the Bishop Dudley House. I'd heard of his name. But I didn't really know who he was. So I ended up counting him and collecting his data. And he told me how he had built a house in Estes Park. He had a koi pond. He had a four-bedroom house. And he and his wife split. And he had this beautiful home, a beautiful family. And things just went awry. It happens to lots of people.
Lots of people,
right.
Yeah.
But the pride that this man had in where he was And he's like, you know, I'll get back there. I'll get back to it. I'll get my life back. But they're on a fork in the road. And so we need people to come in and just mentor. Sit down. You can solve so many problems just by listening and not saying a word. It's amazing how people can sort out their own issues just by them telling their story. Mm-hmm. And then when he left, he's like, you know what? I'm working right now. He goes, but I think I'm going to go look for this other job. It's a better job. He came to that all on his own as he was talking to me. And it was amazing. Those are the kind of things that I see every day, and it's because I work there. But anybody who comes in and wants to volunteer or mentor, and we have space for that, they can see it too. It's just break down that barrier. They're not scary. And people who serve at the banquet, you know, they know it's around across the table. The Bishop Dudley House is really no different.
Yeah.
Same people.
Madeline Shields, thank you so much for coming with an update, and we will talk to you again in the future, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Madeline Shields is the Executive Director of the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House in Sioux Falls. She was in the audience at the Regional Homelessness Forum earlier this year. We'll bring you a bit of that panel discussion next as we continue to cover this story in Sioux Falls, but also across the state of South Dakota. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. In January, a South Dakota community came together to explore responses to homelessness. The Regional Homelessness Forum featured a panel of Sioux Falls and statewide leaders. They included South Dakota Department of Social Services Secretary Matt Althoff and Sioux Falls Housing Executive Director Larissa Diedrich. Also on stage, Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken and Minnehaha County Commissioner Dean Karski. At the invitation of the mayor, I moderated the discussion, and today we are sharing the conversation with you. Now, as the state's largest city grows, so do problems commonly associated with larger cities. But people in rural South Dakota areas face these struggles too, and some rural South Dakotans struggling economically travel to Sioux Falls for services. So these leaders sit at a particular and critical moment in time. It is a time of low unemployment, population growth, high housing prices, an uptick in mental health challenges and our ability to talk about them, political divisions, social media. There is a lot going on in this conversation. For today, let's get the conversation started. The first voice you'll hear is Secretary Althoff.
Thank you, Lori. Matt Althoff, appointed Cabinet Secretary for the Department of Social Services about 2 years ago, at the beginning of Governor Noem's second term. What a privilege it has been to be in this role. I am a Sioux Falls resident. I spend a lot of my time in Pierre, but have spent a lot of my professional life in Sioux Falls working prior to this role at the Catholic Diocese. I served as chancellor for about 13 years. Extraordinarily grateful for the times I've spent on the board at St. Francis House, for the times we collaborated to create the Bishop Dudley Hospitality House under Bishop Swain's leadership. Department of Social Services is quite a safety net provider. Its catchment, of course, is the entire state. We deliver a lot of services directly. We deliver a lot of services indirectly through collaborating partners. Humbled to have many of them represented here tonight. It's a really big enterprise. There's 1,500 individuals that I join as colleagues in mission in the department. We have 31 different service outreaches across the state. Really, really grateful and excited about what's happening here in Sioux Falls. Just this week, actually, we've begun our transition from our downtown office to our new one-stop building. We're excited for what that's going to do for delivery of services to customers, as we call them, clients. A lot of things that are happening in the department at any given moment, particularly to homelessness, I would say that, right, that's what you want me to go to, is one thing we're facing. I can boil it down to a couple real big issues. I suspect we'll dive deeper into these. Yes, we deliver economic assistance. A lot of people would refer to that as welfare. You'd know those as names as Medicaid, as TANF, as SNAP, or food stamps. We in complement to every one of those benefits, we deliver employment services to individuals who qualify for any of these programs. That's a really important part of it because we firmly believe in the department that through work we discover our own sense of dignity, or we discover fulfillment, a sense of fulfillment when we serve others in an organized fashion such as work. We also make certain that there's access to behavioral health. We all know that in the context of homelessness, I suspect all of us are here because we realize it is a contributing factor in a disproportionate number of those who are suffering, experiencing homelessness. So we spend a lot of time supporting what we call community mental health clinics. Grateful to have our colleagues from Southeastern Behavioral Health, Tiffany Wolfgang and Chris Graham, the leaders there, give access to those who are income qualified. That would be the same with substance use. For those that meet income criteria, they would have ready access to assessments and ongoing treatment thanks to the funding provided through the Department of Social Services. We have a lot of providers here in this community that do that. And last, I would just emphasize crisis services. If, in fact, you're experiencing, because of substance use, a crisis, or because of a mental health issue, you have severe mental illness, or you're having a behavioral health crisis, we have worked very, very hard to create regional facilities where you have a walk-in opportunity to receive treatment. So a lot of state funding through the department that erects those. In this community, you would know that as the link. You would know that as Avera Behavioral Health for those crisis services. So some of the areas of focus, Lori, I hope I've answered your question.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Larissa Diedrich. I am the Executive Director of Sioux Falls Housing and Redevelopment Commission and Affordable Housing Solutions. And I just want to start off by saying how wonderful it is to see everyone here and see how passionate everyone is about dealing with the homelessness and the affordable housing issue that we have. So I'm just going to start off by saying some programs that we're extremely excited about and I hope to dive into a little bit more this evening. First of all would be our homeless voucher program. So we're really excited to partner with all of our service agencies in the Sioux Falls area to help assist homeless folks by giving them a Section 8 voucher. We're using a Housing First model with that to get people housed, get them inside, get them safe, warm, fed, clothed, and then work with them on that service plan. So for us, it's not just about taking homelessness from the street. It's about keeping homelessness off the street and working with people for a long-term plan. In addition to that, we have some great partnerships that we're working on, some huge grant opportunities that we are facing. And we are also working through our nonprofit instrumentality, which is Affordable Housing Solutions. We're working with local developers to not only develop homes for people, but create those sustainable homes for renters and for homeowners. So we have a lot of programs, a lot of things that I don't think people realize that we do, but we're really excited to be here and be a part of Sioux Falls.
Hey guys, good evening. My name is Paul Tenakin. I've been the mayor of City Sioux Falls for 7 years. Love to see this great turnout. I was leaving City Hall half hour ago, and I said to someone, there could be 20 people here or 200, I have no idea. And so love to see the turnout. And some of you are standing in the back. There's some seats still sprinkled in, so feel free to come on up. Let me kind of tell you how this came together. We met with Larissa, I don't know, a few months ago maybe, and we were talking about maybe showing a film. There's a film, there's several films out there about homelessness and communities and so forth. And we said, you know, that's fine, and those serve a purpose. But I think what would be more impactful is educating the community and talking to the community about the government's role in this. So you'll notice up here, this is government and quasi-government in Sioux Falls housing, people. There's no nonprofits, no service providers. It's not that's not an important piece of the puzzle. And I think we actually have a slide that's maybe going to come up here at some point and show that. Here it is. But we really wanted to focus on the stuff that maybe you don't know or the community doesn't know that we do as government providers. So tonight, you have the city of Sioux Falls, you have the state of South Dakota, you have Minnehaha County, and I would put Sioux Falls Housing as kind of this nonprofit, quasi-governmental entity that kind of crosses over several of those. There's no one from the business community. There's no one from the public, none of our faith communities, and none of other programs. Those are all important pieces of the puzzle. And this is really important because homelessness is, I use this term a lot, and I use it when I promote this event. This is what we call a wicked problem, okay? Wicked problems have no solutions. We're never going to get to a point in this community where we are going to say, we solved homelessness, okay? They are problems with tensions to be managed, okay? Transit, another wicked problem in our community. Affordable housing, wicked problem, okay? Workforce, you're never going to say, we finally have enough workforce. Thank you. These are wicked problems. They're hard, okay? And the inputs are always changing, and the goalposts are always moving. On top of that, no one owns it, okay? So putting my private sector hat on, if you have a problem in a company, but why aren't these widgets getting done? Well, everybody's kind of in charge of those widgets getting done. Well, but who's in charge of that department? Well, there's kind of 8 people that are in charge of that department. Well, like, no, who's really in charge? Well, no one. That is homelessness. Okay? That is homelessness. We are all in charge of this. And so that's why collaboration on this issue, more than any other issue that we deal with in the city, collaboration is more important. I cannot think of an issue that we deal with where we have more slices of a pie than we have in this issue. Okay? It is the most complicated and most difficult issue in which to collaborate on. I'm being very candid. It's challenging. Okay? There's a lot of different opinions on what success looks like. There's a lot of different opinions on how we handle homelessness and the underlying conditions that led to homelessness. Homelessness is the symptom, the root causes, or what we really need to dig into. What are the root causes that led people to have to seek care for homelessness and seek services for homelessness, which a lot of those are up there. So we want to talk about a few of those tonight. And make this community aware of the things the county does, which we sat in a meeting a couple weeks ago, and Dean shared with me some stuff. I'm like, no idea you did that, okay? And no idea the state did some things when we talked about this forum, and Matt shared some things to say, no idea that you did that. But what happens in a community, and the reason that I kind of wanted to organize this, is when there's homelessness in a community, the throat to choke typically is the mayor. What are you doing about it, mayor? I don't know how often people go to the county commission and at public input and talk about homelessness. Never? No. Never. But they go to the mayor. And the mayor's one slice of this pie. So I'll say one last thing, and then I'll let Dean go. Sioux Falls is the 115th largest city in the country now, right around there. And there is a group of mayors that are part of something called the Menino Study of Mayors. It's the 200 largest cities in the country, and they survey these mayors every year. Boston University does it. And this year, we make time for it. All these mayors make time for it of every city because the data is so valuable. One of the questions they asked this year is, what's one issue that you get the most pressure on in your community to do something about? And the number one issue was homelessness. Follow-up question later on. What's an issue that you get pressure to solve, but you feel like you have the least control over? Homelessness. Okay? So we have this tremendous pressure to do something, do something, do something, but we're one slice of the pie. So that's not a woe is me, but that is a call for collaboration is so key in this. I cannot stress that enough. And that's why we're sitting up here together tonight, because we really want to show you there is collaboration that happens in this wicked problem.
Thank you, Mayor. Dean Kardesky, I'm a Minnehaha County Commissioner, just entered my 9th year. Current Commission Chair, I want to thank Commissioners Blindberg and Kipley for being here. I don't know if any other commissioners are here, but as a Minnehaha County Commissioner, you learn that there's a lot going on that you probably didn't think you'd get involved in. And I want to tip my hat to Carrie Benz and Lori Monis and the Human Services staff. There's over 24 people that work in Minnehaha County Human Services. And a dozen of them, about almost 14 of them, I believe, really work on the issue of homelessness. Statutorily, the county is the last resort for poor relief. Well, within the definition of poor relief becomes homelessness. County, for those of you been around a while, probably remember we used to have a poor farm up on the northeast corner of town. That hasn't been, the property's still there, the county highway department's there, and so is the county cemetery. If you didn't know, we have a county cemetery. Get into that a little bit later. But we don't have a poor farm anymore. That was dissolved a while ago. But what we really do, Minnehaha County, we're statutorily the last resort. By default, we've become the first stop for the homeless community. And in that, I mean, we don't build facilities. We don't build homeless shelters as a county. The city doesn't build homeless shelters. But what Minnehaha County does is we help to manage and coordinate all the programs. We know who the landlords are that will help us with different subsets of homeless people. We know where to get vouchers. We know where we can take people to or send people to. And we do our best to collaborate all those services between all the nonprofits, the different shelters, and that type of thing. So we are kind of the hub for that coordination factor. And then we also, as a last resort, our budget for just for rent and deposits and that type of thing is nearly $1 million to assist people. We want to keep people from becoming homeless so we don't have to help them once they become homeless. So it's easier to prevent it than it is to have that issue that we've got to manage, because homelessness is an issue, as the mayor said that. I personally hate to say it's a problem. It's an issue. It's going to be around forever. And it's how we manage it. So that's why we're here today. We're here to point out all the great things that we've got going on and try to collaborate more and look for input from the community. Take your questions. Try to answer them and let you know really what we've got going on and how we're doing our best to manage the issue of homelessness and how we're trying to prevent it as much as we are to manage it. So, and I, too, am amazed at the turnout tonight. So it's great to see so many faces here. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about data and information that you have. Do you have the right kind of actionable data that you can communicate to some of the nonprofits so that we know what's happening and when, whether it's month by month or weather events or, you know, housing crunch? There's an apartment fire, let's say, and there's a shortage in housing and all those people are going to be searching for affordable housing, or a business closes and you know people are losing their jobs. Are there gaps in the actionable data, and we'll start with Mayor Tenhaken, that you would like to see collected more?
Yeah, you know, I sometimes tell my team, in God we trust, everybody else bring data, okay? Because we need data to make good decisions. And I can speak for the city in that we do not have good data on the homelessness issue. We don't. If you asked me right now, what's the size of our homeless population, what's the zip codes of our homeless population, how long have they been homeless, show me a chart and a breakdown, who are our 35 most chronically homeless in our community? I don't have any. What are their names? I do not have that as the mayor of Sioux Falls. And I think people would be flabbergasted that I don't have this data. So I get the pressure to fix it, but I don't have the data to know what I'm even fixing. I just know it's a challenge.
Who has the data?
Everybody.
Secretary, do you have actionable data that you can provide?
Here's a data that I think is important for us all. We're talking about those who happen to not have a roof over their head tonight, and that comes to mind especially this week when we've seen another death by exposure in our community. We all grieve in these moments, but 148,000 South Dakotans are Medicaid enrolled at one point last year. 71,000 South Dakotans are SNAP enrolled. They enroll because of their income level. They enroll because their income level is matched against the federal poverty level. And I think that's the number that we ought to, if we're going to be a community that's collaborating, we have to be mindful that at any given moment, there's a household that's one behavioral health crisis away, that's one medical episode, one accident away, one car accident away, one missed utility payment away from becoming that individual, that statistic, which is those who don't currently have it. So I share in the frustration with the mayor. We in government tend to have a lot of aggregation, and our scale at a statewide level makes for some pretty impressive numbers. I'm not sure that it actually leads us to it, and that's where I continue to emphasize to our staff, just to be very clear, is that's why we never miss the opportunity to lift a soul. How do we lift up? How do we give encouragement beyond? Because they might be on the verge. We got them eligible. We got them enrolled. But it is going to be that added lift in on the personal touches that we do. Mindful that it is never simply the infrastructure of government that causes persons to avoid homelessness. We do all of this, to the mayor's great point, the pie chart up here, in collaboration with this beautiful reflection, this potpourri, if you will, of nonprofits and religious groups that are out here today that accompany infrastructure accompaniment, I think is really how we work through that data, how we work through that mindfulness of who's on the verge or who has actually now fallen into the point where they do not have a place to lay their head that's beneath a roof of their own. You can claim that as a dodge. You know, I the only thing I'm aware of, Mayor, is of course the one-time count is really staggering. I guess where I'm going with that is that I think, not to all of you here tonight, you're here because you care. God bless you. But I find it amazing when people lay out the statistics of what does federal poverty level mean for a household of four? What is that amount of money? And how many people? I just said 149,000. This is next to no income. And so how many of our fellow Sioux Falls residents or our fellow South Dakota residents are living off of that little income? We know this because they've now enrolled. I think that to me is the data point, is that there's a lot of people that are not benefiting from what we might look around and see the affluence of our great nation, our great community, the innovation of the communities that we all so are privileged to call as our home. So that's the data point that I tend to be focused on, Lori.
Because what I'm trying to get at here is we don't have any way of measuring, and clarify this if I'm wrong, because I kind of hope I'm wrong, but we don't have any way of measuring if all this pie chart that's working in this one direction is having the impact of reducing homelessness in this region. That is correct. And you could see where that would be frustrating for people. Yeah.
And data is a tricky thing because there's so many different definitions of what homelessness is. There's one on the federal level, one on the state level, one on the county level. What it really comes down to is assisting who is homeless at the time. Next week, I believe, is the street count for homelessness. I look to Carrie, she's my resource here. So, and you know, we're gonna have a picture of one day of what homelessness looks like in Sioux Falls. Shout out to the Community Foundation and, you know, their work here. And you know, they came to Minnehaha County and gave us a $30,000 grant so we could put everybody on the same page. You know, the problems are truly somewhat systemic in that, you know, how does the system define these things? We're not all talking the same language. So getting us all together and talking the same way about the same problem, what is the definition? What does this mean? And that's really the effort we've been putting a lot of time into, to work with our collaborators to say, okay, when you say this, what do you mean? So that we are all talking about the same thing. So data's tricky, and it's useful, but it's really only good for that one day.
That was the Regional Homelessness Forum, recorded on Thursday, January 23rd. That is our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.